Welcome to As It Is, a 30-minute program designed for English learners. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English. We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world.
Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump said he is a uniter, but the growing violence at his campaign events has led many to question whether Trump can unite his own party. His supporters and opponents have fought in the last few days. Some people have been arrested. At a Trump rally in North Carolina, one of his supporters punched a protester who was being removed from the event. Another event planned for last Friday in Chicago was canceled after a large group of protesters entered the building. On Saturday, a protester was stopped before he could reach Trump on the stage in Ohio. At rallies in Missouri, protesters repeatedly interrupted Trump's speech and were removed by security. Republican and Democratic opponents said Trump is responsible for the clashes at these events. Senator Ted Cruz of Texas is Trump's leading Republican opponent. Cruz said that Trump's campaign encourages violence. And Ohio Governor John Kasich, another Republican candidate, added, "Donald Trump has created a toxic environment." Senator Marco Rubio of Florida is another Republican candidate. He criticized Trump for calling on his supporters to attack anti-Trump demonstrators. Speaking with CNN, Rubio compared Trump to a third-world dictator and said Trump's campaign is really going to do damage to America. Both Democratic candidates, Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders, also criticized Trump for his words and actions. But Trump told CNN that people linked to the Sanders campaign caused the violence in Chicago Friday. Trump said he should be praised for canceling the event. Sanders said some of his supporters had protested at the event, but he said his campaign did not organize the protests. All of the Republican candidates have promised to support the person who wins the party's nomination at its convention in July. But in recent days, both Rubio and Kasich have said they may not be able to do so if Trump is the nominee. U.S. military officials say they captured a key person in the Islamic State's chemical weapons program in Iraq. Ann Ball has the story.
The IS operative was captured by American Special Operations Forces. New gas attacks by the terror group were reported there Wednesday. The suspect was not identified. His detention was reported last week, but his connection to chemical weapons was not announced until now. The IS suspect was taken during raids in Iraq and Syria by a U.S. expeditionary targeting force. Their duty is to collect intelligence and identify high-level IS leaders. A Pentagon spokesman, Captain Jeff Davis, would not comment on recent operations, but he gave general information about the expeditionary targeting force. One of the goals, one of the missions we anticipate they will do, is that they will capture a small number of ISIL leaders, he said, using another name for Islamic State. The detention of these we anticipate to be very short term. It will be coordinated with Iraqi authorities. Officials in Iraq told VOA that IS fighters fired chemical weapons late Tuesday and early Wednesday. They said IS fired rockets loaded with mustard gas, also known as sulfur mustard, into a town north of Baghdad. Iraqi and Kurdish officials said dozens of civilians were injured by the attack on Taza Hormatu. Most residents of the town are Shiite Muslim ethnic Turkmens. U.S. officials say IS is still developing its chemical weapons program. So some reports about the terror group's use of chemical weapons on the battlefield is still largely about fear. The officials say IS fighters find it easier to make and use improvised explosive devices, IEDs, or suicide bombers to injure and kill people. I'm Ann Ball.
A California company paid a $10 million fine for internet advertisements about so-called miracle weight loss products. Bruce Alpert tells us more.
The U.S. Trade Commission, or FTC, said the company's products, including green coffee, did not lead, as claimed, to a tiny belly. Also false were the emails that linked to phony news stories about the products, the FTC said. One of the stories reported, "Oprah says it's excellent," the FTC said. The idea was to make people believe Oprah Winfrey was a fan of the weight loss products, the FTC said. Another story carried this headline, "Special report, lose 23 pounds of belly fat in 1 month." Last month, the company, Sales of California, agreed to pay a $10 million fine. Most of the money will go to people who bought the company's weight loss products, the FTC said. In 2015, the FTC said it received 3.1 million consumer complaints. Getting the most complaints were debt collectors, the FTC said. Some complained of callers claiming to be from a government agency and threatening jail for anyone who did not pay up immediately, the FTC said. Some tried to collect money from people who did not owe any money, the FTC said. Second on the FTC complaint list fell under identity theft. That is, when someone claims to be someone he or she isn't. Here is how it works. People gain a person's personal information. They use that information, like a credit card number, to buy products in the victim's name. They also use the information to empty the victim's bank account, the FTC said. Other times, people file fake tax returns in their victim's name. They then have tax refunds sent to their bank accounts. We recognize that identity theft and unlawful debt collection practices continue to cause significant harm to many consumers, said Jessica Rich. She is director of the FTC's Bureau of Consumer Protection. As for the miracle weight loss products, the FTC said marketers for Sales Slash used identity fraud to convince people their products were real. They did that by sending out emails that appeared to come from friends and family of the email recipients. The messages urged the recipients to click links to online articles about the diet products. These fake news websites appeared to be objective news reports about defendants' weight loss products, the FTC said in its complaint. In fact, they are paid advertisements that advance false weight loss claims. As usual, the FTC has this advice: if an offer or product seems too good to be true, it probably is not worth your time or money. And the FTC urges people to be careful about giving out personal information. Don't give your account number to anyone on the phone unless you've made the call to a company you know to be reputable, the FTC said. If you've never done business with them before, do an online search first for reviews or complaints. I'm Bruce Alpert.
The language used in science can be a distraction for many people, especially children. But one marine biologist is trying to change that by making her ocean research interesting to people of all ages. Ana Mateo has more.
The language used by scientists to explain complex ideas can be difficult. And, well, let's face it, sometimes boring. The language, with its Latin words and long scientific terms, could be one reason some people avoid learning about science, especially children. American Danielle Dixon is a marine biologist. She wants to make science fun for children. Dixon has turned that idea into a series of children's books. The 9 books are written so that her research is easy to understand.
I just don't really think kids should be left out of it, and I thought that storybooks would probably be one of the easiest ways to sort of captivate them and have them understand.
Danielle Dixon is an assistant professor at the University of Delaware. Dixon says another goal of her writing is to help increase understanding of the ocean environment. She spent almost 2 years in the South Pacific working on her postdoctoral research. She went to the island nation of Fiji to investigate coral reefs that are collapsing, or as she says, degrading. The goal of her research is to identify why some healthy coral reefs are breaking down. She also wants to find out how this degradation affects fish that live in and around the reefs.
A number of the reefs are converting from being, you know, these beautiful coral reef systems that have a lot of holes for animals to hide in, into reefs that the coral is degrading and collapsing, and then there's not as much hiding spaces for fishes and things like that.
Early in her research, Dixon made videos for people in Fiji. These videos explained her work to the local community. She says she wanted them to understand how her research would help them. For the local children, Dixon started making books explaining her work. This helped to keep them from walking through her laboratory, baby pools filled with water she was using for her experiments.
I was living actually in the village with some of the locals. It was a lot easier to get research done if they understood what I was doing and how it would help them. And one of the ways that I was able to connect with the adults was I'd make these videos for them, and then I started making the children's books for the kids so that they'd have a better idea of why I was there, so that when I asked them not to walk through the baby pools I was using for experiments or something like that, that would actually happen.
When Dixon returned to the United States, she started doing the same thing for children in this country. She uses colorful storybooks to capture the imagination of children. While she has their attention, she provides very useful information about science. Home and family are at the heart of many great stories. The search for one's home, or protecting one's home, is universal. In one of her books, Danielle Dixon tells young readers about two fish, Mr. and Mrs. Goby. The fish live in a coral reef, and their home is sick.
Mr. and Mrs. Goby lived in their coral home, and all of a sudden the coral started to get sick, but they needed their house to stay alive, so what could they do to help? It sort of goes through all of the scientific findings, but it does it in the sense of these two gobies that are trying to save their home.
The story about the little fish was based on one of Dixon's studies. She explains that one form of seaweed kills coral on contact.
We do know that there's one species of seaweed that if you put it in contact with coral for 48 hours, the contact point of the coral will be dead. And there are a number of organisms that live inside corals, this tiny little coral goby being one of them.
The goby fish have a strong interest in keeping their coral home healthy. When coral are in danger from seaweed, the marine organisms send a distress signal to Mr. and Mrs. Goby. Please come help. And that's just what the fish do. Dixon explains.
So I was interested to see if, since the goby lives in the coral and that's really its home, it should have a vested interest in protecting its home. So I ran a series of experiments to see, you know, does the goby actually help the coral fight the seaweed? And it ends up that they do. And we found out that the corals actually can chemically communicate with the goby to tell it, like, come help me, I'm hurt right here.
As a marine scientist, Dixon wants her stories to be both educational and inspirational, serving as an agent for change. She also includes in her books a call to action, asking readers what they can do to make a difference.
One of the things I do in those storybooks is I have like a last page, and the last page talks about what you can do to help. You know, there's a lot of things that even a six-year-old is able to do, whether it's shutting your lights off when you leave a room or riding your bike to your friend's house instead of having your parents drive you. There's a lot of stuff that they can do and still feel like they're making a difference.
Danielle Dixon's books shine a light on the environmental problems facing our world's oceans. They also make science fun and understandable for children. But her books may have an unintended consequence, something she may not have planned on. When Danielle visited an aquarium at age 5, a tour guide gave her a book about whales. The conversations that resulted from that book inspired Dixon to become a marine biologist. Perhaps her books will inspire a child to make science a career. I'm Anna Mateo.
The alcoholic drink most people call scotch has been around for hundreds of years. According to the Scotch Whiskey Association of Great Britain, known as the SWA, there is an entry in Scotland's tax records from 1494 that shows an order of malt used to make 1,500 bottles of something called water of life. The SWA says this means distilling was already a part of daily life more than 500 years ago.
Whiskey is produced all over the world, and there are many variations. For example, some whiskey is aged in barrels that used to hold wine, beer, or bourbon. Other than in Scotland, there are well-known distillers in the United States, Japan, Australia, France, and other countries. Judges have been choosing the best whiskies in the world each year since 2007 at an event called World Whiskies Awards. The title for World's Best Single Malt Whiskey was won by Scotland 4 times, Japan 3 times, and Australia once. Then, in 2015, there was a big surprise.
The best whiskey in the world came from Taiwan. It came from a distillery called Kavalan, owned by King Car, a big beverage company. The name of the winning whiskey is Solist Vino Barrique. That means it is aged in a barrel originally used for wine. If you want to buy this whiskey, be prepared to spend more than $100. Distilling is the process of producing and extracting alcohol by combining roasted barley, known as malt, or another grain, with water and yeast. The reaction of the yeast with the other ingredients is called fermentation. That is how alcohol is produced. The mixture is then heated, and the alcohol, which evaporates before water, is captured and cooled, producing whiskey. The whiskey is stored for many years in barrels before it is bottled and sold. The barrels are usually crafted from oak, and their insides are toasted or burned slightly by fire. This adds flavor and character to the whiskey. Most of the time, the longer a whiskey is aged, the better it tastes. Because of the aging time, an older whiskey is usually more expensive than a younger whiskey.
There is a world shortage of old single malt scotch, according to a recent story on CNN Money. That is because, over the past 10 years, a lot of people started buying aged whiskey. But distilleries did not prepare for the boom in popularity. And since you cannot produce an 18-year-old scotch in half the time, there is a shortage that may last for another 10 to 15 years. This is a problem for whiskey fans. But whiskey from Taiwan provides a solution. Whiskey experts say the warm and humid weather in Taiwan helps whiskey mature faster. That means it may taste better than a whiskey of the same age made in a cooler climate. Ian Chang is the master blender for Kavalan. He says Taiwan's climate is perfectly suited for making whiskey.
With the heat in summer and the cold air in winter, we can make sure that we have plenty of extraction and oxidation. And the whiskey is therefore very mellow, very mature in a very short time.
Another whiskey reviewer, Jim Murray, called Kavalan's original single malt whiskey the Asian Whiskey of the Year in the 2015 edition of his book called Whiskey Bible. These awards are making Kavalan whiskey popular in the United States. It has only been available for 2 years. Bill Thomas owns Jack Rose Dining Saloon in Washington, D.C. It is a restaurant known for its large whiskey collection. It has more than 2,000 bottles. Thomas says he does not have very much Kavalan whiskey in stock because the demand is too strong.
It's available here, but we only get really some of the basics. A lot of what they're premium, they have like different levels of whiskey. And a lot of the premium stuff we're not getting here. We're not getting all of their finishes or not in enough quantities for us to keep it on the shelves. We've got a couple base ones, they're sherry wood, they're cash rank, which are fantastic. But we would love to get access to the complete breadth of all of their whiskeys. And I think that'll come, but I think demand has outpaced their production right now.
Chang says Kavalan is aware that some places in the U.S. do not receive very much of his whiskey right now. It is available in 38 of the 50 states. In 2 years, about 27,000 bottles have been sold. He is hoping that number will rise as the whiskey becomes available in more places and more people learn about his brand. The distillery is trying to increase production to meet the demands in North America and around the world. Chang says, one problem with exporting to the U.S. is that different rules about alcohol in each state make it, in his words, a bit difficult to import our whiskey into the U.S. Voice of America Learning English went to the recent Whiskey Fest event in Washington, D.C., to see what people know about Kavalan whiskey. It was the first taste for some. Mickey Kaminsky of Baltimore came to the event to try a number of rare whiskeys from all over the world.
So it's very smooth. You can taste the wine influence. It's a very gentle single malt. Very gentle. You easily drink this. Very nice. It's not superb.
He thought he might buy a bottle of Kavalan in the future.
Kyle Kennedy is from Georgia. He came to the event and made a special point to taste some of the different Kavalan whiskeys. For example, there is an original single malt and some aged in barrels that once held wine, sherry, port, and bourbon. The alcohol content, or proof, differs too. Varieties of whiskey from the same distiller are called expressions.
Really, I gotta say, after going to a few other places, it didn't stand out. It wasn't bad, it wasn't good, it just didn't leave a mark like some of the other things that I've tasted before.
Cassie Fullington is part owner of a bar in State College, Pennsylvania, called Local Whiskey. She was at Whiskey Fest looking for new whiskeys to offer her customers. She had not tried Kavalan before.
Not too sweet. It's very mellow. It's very nice to drink. I would probably introduce it to somebody that was just starting to drink scotches, if they're converting from bourbon to scotch.
Ian Chang says there are some challenges ahead, but he and Kavalan are happy with the way the whiskey has been received in North America so far. First, the distillery must find a way to send more bottles to the United States. Second, it needs to gain fans at home. Chang says drinkers in Taiwan find the whiskies from Scotland to be more exotic. And finally, he and his colleagues need to keep teaching people about why whiskey from Taiwan can taste good.
We don't really feel like an underdog, but we understand that there are consumers who don't understand why Kavalan can be produced in the heat of Taiwan. And therefore, we think that it takes time for us to communicate with consumers. We are very confident that once they have tried it, they will like it. And therefore, I think that it just takes time for the global consumers to know about Kavalan.
I'm Dan Friedel.
And I'm Katie Weaver.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.